the Reverend Al Sharpton.
Thank you very much, and let me say that I'm very honored to have been invited to speak and to be the kickoff speaker for this conference. And I'm equally honored to be introduced by Judge Lowe, who I'm sure many of you know has operated in a very admirable and a very exemplary way as a jurist, and his regard and respect is way beyond the halls of where he has served. Give a hand to Judge Love. One of the reasons that I was very honored and happy to come to address this body is I think that what you are wrestling with here in this conference and what we're wrestling with in the state of New York, in the judicial and criminal justice community, happens to be the focus of where the nation is right now. Many years, many of us in the broader civil rights community has tried to raise the issue of disparities in sentencing and law enforcement and policing across the board. And in many times, we were marginalized, ignored, unless there was an incident or an explosion. And then as soon as they would calm down the incident or the explosion, business would go on as usual. I think that the challenge is now that society has seen enough to where there's going to have to be real change and not just a brush over or a makeover and move on to the next issue. The fact that we are now in a different age and a different time has made that possible. Now, how do I say that we're in a different age and a different time? The incidents that all of us are familiar with that has happened in the last year, the incidents are not new. What is new is the technology where everyone is seeing the incidents. Last July, I was in Nevada during part of National Action Network's voter tour of fighting against the changing of voter laws in various states. Over 30 states are trying to change the voting process, voter ID laws, they're ending early voting, ending Sunday to the polls. I get a call while I was in Nevada from Staten Island, where a mother told me a New York City policeman had choked her son to death. The evidence, she said, was a young man had videotaped it. And she got my cell phone number from the Staten Island coordinator of National Action Network. I came home, landed, and that Saturday we have rallies every Saturday morning live on radio at our headquarters in Harlem. She and the widow were there, and we started the movement around Eric Garner. Before we could get the main march in Staten Island, I get a call from the grandfather, Michael Brown, in Ferguson. And on and on and on till now, the recent this week, where we saw going on in Texas. One of the misnomers of our involvement that Judge Lowe alluded to is I never get involved in cases that the victims don't call us. Many times they call us because they want national attention on it. People do not call me because they want to keep a secret. They call us because they want to make it an issue. So when I go to a Ferguson or Sanford, Florida or Staten Island, and they say you're going to stir things up, that's exactly why the victims called me. The real issue is not why they call me. The real issue is why don't they have the confidence in calling the law. Those in the criminal justice system should not be angry at me for standing in the gap that they made in the first place. If people have more confidence in civil rights leaders than they do law enforcement, that is a reason for dialogue, not disagreement. Because ultimately, what are we doing? When we march in Staten Island or Ferguson or Sanford, we are marching appealing for the system to work. We are not trying to destroy the system. Those trying to destroy the system are not marching. They're the ones that are anarchists and terrorists. Is it really that extreme for me to ask judges to be fair and prosecutors to be impartial? Is it really a lot to say to police, let's follow the guidelines? New York City is against guidelines to choke a man.
Our life.
So it was really extreme for me to say you shouldn't have choked the man to death. At the end of the day, if we put away the style and the volume on all sides, the basic agreements are there. We've just got to make them work. If we don't, history will be unkind, because every generation is judged by what it does with the challenges of its generation. And the one thing that we all have to deal with is we can't choose the challenges. The challenges choose us. There's a controversy going on right now in New York City where the present police commissioner, Bill Bratton, made a statement to the Guardian newspaper that the reason there was not more diversity among the New York City police in terms of blacks is because many of them have a record and have been to jail. He says it was taken out of context. The quote is correct, but taken out of context. Well, first of all, context or not, the issue is, why do you have a disproportionate amount of blacks that have gone to jail? And why do you have a disproportionate amount that therefore cannot serve in police department? Rather than go through whether Bratton should have said what he said in the way he should have said it, and it certainly could have been worded different, the underlying issue is a challenge for the criminal justice system in this state. One is the disproportionate level of sentencing blacks get in this state and around the country. Two, the disproportionate prosecutions based on race. Three, how we are targeted differently even in arrest. One of the things that years ago that I engaged in was a program that dealt with the fact that you've got to try and correct behavior, not just detain bad behavior. So Professor Charles Ogletree of Harvard University got two unlikely people to work on a second chance program for nonviolent drug offenders. One was the former mayor of New York, Ed Koch. The other was me, Reverend Al Sharpton. Why were we unlikely? Because Ed Koch and I fought the whole time he was mayor. First time I ever was arrested, he signed the warrant. And I thought it was an overreaction for him. So what? I was sitting in his office protesting at his desk. But we both agree that the criminal justice system should give a way to expunge the records of nonviolent drug offenders. And we toured this country together as former adversaries on a Second Chance program. I would challenge Commissioner Bratton that we need to look at the disproportionate numbers of blacks that have been arrested or summoned or cited with stop and frisk and broken windows, and develop programs to expunge the records of those if we really want to look at how we increase the availability of those that could serve on police departments. We should be initiating programs to expunge records of nonviolent offenders of petty crimes. We should make it very clear that people that have misdemeanors and been arrested on stop and frisk can serve in the police department. And Commissioner Bratton needs to know you might have to work with those that have questioned you in order to get that message out, because the message is usually received by who the messengers are. And those messengers, the clergy, the community activists, need to be partnering with the commissioner as he talks about a drive to increase blacks in the police department. Because Ray Kelly and I didn't agree on stop and frisk. I marched on him, I dealt with it all the way till he was out. But Ray Kelly did one thing very smart. He would every year invite us to address the police academy at the Apollo Theater. Every year I spoke at the graduation of police, because he understood that we could give a message to them that we came from a different position. And that's what Brad needs to do today. We need to expunge records. We need to make it clear misdemeanors do not eliminate you. And we need to work with people you're not comfortable with. You're in the policing business. You're not in the popularity business. And if you can't deal with people that disagree with you, how are you going to deal with a criminal element that is opposed to what society needs? We need to start acting like adults in the criminal justice system in the state and quit trying to be cuddled and patted in the cheek and act like what we're going to have to do does not require hard decisions. In the same light, when we look at police and civilian matters, we must take the politics out of that. One of the reasons that I and National Action Network, along with others and my colleagues and who work very closely with me on these issues, is Mark Morial of the National Urban League and Cornell Brooks, the head of the NAACP. We've said that we agree with the formula that you need the Justice Department nationally or state-by-state special prosecutors to come in and review and oversee cases where there is a question of a killing or an assault in a police civilian manner. Why? Because it removes the appearances of politics. Local prosecutors are elected and can have to deal with the local police unions and just the clear intrinsic relationship between police and their cases every day. Doesn't mean all prosecutors are corrupt, doesn't mean all prosecutors are racist, but the appearances of a conflict does not give the comfort to the victim or the citizens that's in question. And to take the prosecutors out of those cases and give them to state-appointed or to the federal government automatically brings down some of the level of suspicion and tension in the cases. I would couple that with what Judge Lippman has come with grand jury reform, where he has proposed, where you have judges oversee the grand jury proceedings and take the secrecy out. One of the things that I've always remembered is former Chief Judge Saul Wattner saying that you can indict a ham sandwich if you want to. Well, that means you could also not indict a ham sandwich if you want to. And the secret proceedings only add to the level of tensions and the level of those that have concerns that bubble up sometime into explosive levels. Having the secret grand jury, which is why I agree with the judge on grand jury reform, is only embellished when you've got a videotape now. And then people come back with no indictment. When the world has seen the tape and don't have any idea of what was put in front of the grand jury. So in the case of Eric Garner, the whole world saw choking, 11 times a man saying, I can't breathe. Grand jury comes back, no bill, and nobody knows what happened in the grand jury. How can I look at something and you tell me, don't believe your lying eyes? Other than to release the grand jury and release the secrecy and move with the judge as has proposed it. So grand jury reform is very, very much needed. Another that has been raised is the age question. We worked on this commission on age. Attorney Michael Hardy, General Counsel of National Action Network, is on the commission appointed by the governor for name. Nothing is more startling and heart-wrenching to me than the story of the Browder young man who just committed suicide. 16 years old, arrested for allegedly stealing a backpack. 3 years on Rikers Island, never went to trial, never was convicted. Finally, when it was found he was innocent, he was released after his spirit and psyche had been broken, and just a couple of weeks ago committed suicide. Browder's blood is on the hands of a system that, one, allowed a minor to be prosecuted as an adult, and then you get lost in the system. I think the challenge of Eric Garner to Browder is a challenge for those in the criminal justice system, in the judicial system in this state, to stand up at this time. How you stand up could make you the model of where the nation is going. How you respond, what we carve out, if we answer the bell and create laws on grand jury reform and create laws on age and create laws on secrecies in grand jury and deal with issues like expungement and really recruiting more blacks in law enforcement, it can be the model for Baltimore, for Ferguson, for Texas. If we flunk, we would become the empire state of missing an opportunity to seize a moment and make it correct and make it positive. It is a challenge that we need to stand up and deal with. We can be angry all we want at each other, or we can solve the problem by standing together and understanding this is a problem. And it's going to take adjustments on both sides of the issue to make real change happen. Why do we remember people like Franklin Williams, Thurgood Marshall, Dr. King, Fannie Lou Hamer? Why do we remember them? We remember them because in tough times, with hard questions, when things that made people uncomfortable, they stood up and did the right thing and forced change, even at the risk of their careers and prestige and credibility. We don't remember everybody that was a judge like Williams or like Marshall. We remember them because they stood above and beyond their title. We don't remember every preacher in Atlanta, Georgia. We remember King because he used his ministry to make a difference. We only remember people that step outside their comfort zone and make a difference that needed to be made at the time that it needed to be made. It's interesting, in the back, Judge Lowe and the mayor and the county executive and I were in a conversation, and we were talking about legacy and talking about how people are remembered. 2 days ago, I was in Tuskegee, Alabama, and I'll close on this. I was there to give the eulogy at a funeral service of a businessman who passed, Albert Joyner, brother of radio announcer Tom Joyner. And I said to them that one of the things that always strikes me, Judge Lowe, is that you go to funerals and everyone sits there so objectively patting their tears from their eyes, not ever stopping to think that all of us have a funeral schedule. We just don't know the date. Everybody is going to sooner or later leave here. Like my father used to tell my mother's boyfriends when she was a young lady, you don't have to go home, but you're leaving here. The question is, in whatever position you serve in the criminal justice system, the question is, as a judge, as an advocate, as an attorney, whatever your role, the question is, when your service is over, what did it mean?
That's right.
Did you just hide behind a title? Was your achievement that you were able to get the job and you just got paid because of your attendance? Or did you make the title mean something more than what it would have meant had you not had the title? I preached the funeral of Michael Jackson and James Brown and other very notable people. But I stopped preaching a lot of funerals. One I did this week was the first I did in a while. Because the hardest job of a preacher is to preach the funeral of irrelevant people. And I got tired of getting up, making up stuff for folks. I mean, you know, that's a hard job. They roll the body down the aisle of church. Family sitting up on the front row crying and carrying on. And we supposed to get up and hallucinate a life for you you never lived. I remember after I did the eulogy at Michael's burial, we were coming out the cemetery that night. And a very well-known artist, if I called his name, everyone here would know him, stopped me and said, Reverend Al, I said, yes. He said, I was really touched by that eulogy. I said, well, thank you. He said, no, it really moved me. I said, thank you. He said, if I go first, I want you to do one for me just like that. I said, well, you're going to have to give me something to work with. You should ask yourself at this conference, what will they say when I have finished serving in the capacity I'm in?
All right, well.
What has the meaning of me being at that post been? And if you are not satisfied with your own answer, then you ought to leave this conference and go to work, not for society, not for humanity, but for yourself. Judge Lowe is right. Most of the issues I have fought, from police conduct all the way to voting rights and other issues, I answer not because of who called me. I have no idea what case is going to be nationally known or not. I answer because I don't want at the end of my journey somebody to say I called and he would not respond. I answer for me because of what I want to represent to myself when I look in the mirror. And you've got to answer what you want to look at when you look in the mirror. I meet people every day that tells me I couldn't have took what they did years ago. I could have never been in the back of the bus. I could have never indulged a white water fountain. Well, that's always easy. Talk about what you would have, could have, should have. But you are right now in the age of chokehold. Right now in the age of Browder, young man committing suicide, sitting on Rikers Island 3 years for nothing. Right now, where grand jury reform is an issue. You are in the age right now where states are changing voting laws. Don't talk about what you would have done in the 50s. What are you going to do in 15? Don't talk about what you wouldn't have took back in the day. You're in a day in the state of New York where the world is looking at Eric Garner, where the world is looking at what we do and don't do, where the world is looking at how we still have a low percentage of blacks in law enforcement in every major city in this state. What are we going to do about it? Where are the new Thurgood Marshalls and the Franklin Richardsons and the Franklin Williamses and the Shirley Chisholms and the Fannie Lou Hamers? Where are the new progressives? Where are we? It's not enough to raid the bios of those that paved the way. Did they pave the way for people that just would become judicial bureaucrats, who would be paid for warming seats and never shedding light and standing for something? I would hope they paved the way for the next generation of greatness to come forward and show great tidings and pass the baton on to those behind us. If not, we make mockery of their sacrifice and we reduce their greatness to something of the past rather than a link into what is going on in the present. So as you confer in this conference, confer, debate, discuss, but be resolved individually and collectively that we have inherited a great legacy and a great obligation. There is no doubt about that. The issues are clear and they're public and they're graphic. The only thing left that is undecided is whether we can rise to the occasion. Thank you and God bless you.